Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's afternoon satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Arvind. We begin by offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, and we are all eager and set to begin a new series. We had a curtain raiser last week. Those of you who were with us, we spoke about a very exalted devotee of Swami, Dr. John Hislop, one of the devotees who were very close to Swami in the earlier years, in the 60s and 70s, and was instrumental in setting up the organization in United States. More than setting up of the organization, I think he was a conduit through whom Swami expressed his views and his wishes of how the organization must function, not only in India, in every other place. And we began the journey of going through his book, The Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, where he documented some of the beautiful conversations that he has had the privilege to have with Swami. Some of them were taped. Swami gave the permission for him to do that. But most of them were, of course, questions which he had asked Swami. He comes back after an interview. He makes notes of all the answers that he has given. And in fact, I believe some of them were even, he had the opportunity to corroborate it with Swami. Wherever he had doubts, he could go and ask Swami that, Swami, this is what I've written. Is that right? So we thought that we'll go through through that entire book, every question that he has asked, every discussion that he's been a part of, and he has documented in that book, because it's literally a mine of information for all of us who want to know what is Swami's approach to certain philosophies, certain problems, certain understandings that Swami wants us to have. So we're going to go through that. We're going to start with the first question, but before that, let's invite Arvind to join all of us. Sairam, Arvind.
Sairam, Prem, and Sairam to all our listeners. You know, when we observe the human body, the mouth has a very unique function. All the good things, all the consumption is done by the mouth. But then, the nutrition, nourishment and energy from whatever the mouth gets to consume actually reaches every organ and every limb and every part of the body. It is so important that the mouth consumes what is good for the entire body and what is nutritious and what is full of energy. Because if the mouth indulges in wrong food, in junk food, then the damage happens not just to the mouth, but to the whole body also, of which the mouth is part of. Going by this example and analogy, Bhagwan gives opportunities to individuals to interact with Swami. And many of us receive Swami's message indirectly through the questions and answers that these individuals have asked Swami. When those individuals become like a good mouth, you know, ingesting things that are nutritious and energy giving for the spiritual journey, the body, that is the entire body of devotees and seekers, is healthy and wonderful. In that sense, we can say that Dr. John Hislop has been a wonderful mouth, because when he was given the opportunities of interaction with Swami, he was given chances to ask Swami questions. He genuinely asked questions that are spiritual in nature. He did not, you know, of course, he might have spoken organizational matters and even personal matters, but most of the time he has kept his questions spiritual, which is why I think even to this day, this book stands as a treasure trove for any spiritual seeker, especially in the Satya Sai world. And it is our privilege, as you said, and our pleasure to go through the different questions and answers that have been delineated in this book, Conversations with Sai.
Very true, and probably this is one thing we'll keep coming back to every now and then, where how must we ask questions? You know, these two books, one is Conversations with Satya Sai, where, you know, I think Swami has very, very patiently allowed him to ask questions, and you can see the nature of questions that he has asked and the genuineness with which it is asked, because many of us ask questions, and Swami would often say this, I think in one of his discourse he says that the river of jnana flows between two banks. And Swami would say that is samshayatma vinashyate and shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Which means to be able to progress in your understanding, your questions or your queries should be between doubts and real questions. Because sometimes we ask questions out of doubt. You know, we question the person who is saying something. You know, that is when it actually becomes a doubt, or you show your lack of faith. Right?
You're testing your master or teacher.
Right. And Swami says your question should not be to question the master, but your question should be to understand better what the master is saying. And when that is the approach, then the questions will be genuine and the answers will prod you to ask better questions and to gain better understanding. That's one thing that you see in this book. Of course, the other book I would probably say we may or may not take it up here is the Prashnottarvahini or Sandeha Nivarani, where Swami himself plays the role of the one who's asking questions, where he sets the standard of what kind of questions Swami would want us to ask and what were the answers that you'd expect from Swami.
And the beautiful thing about Swami giving answers is that many times we observe, for example, dear listeners, even as Prem and myself, we went through these questions and answers. And when we had our pre-satsang discussions, both of us had a slightly different understanding to the same words and same answers. Why I'm saying this is because though Swami is giving the answers, we should keep in mind that Swami is not just answering the questions. Most importantly, he's answering the questioner. That is why when we look at answers that Swami gives to the same question asked by different people, the way Swami elaborates on it, the way Swami explains it, the analogies that Swami gives, or the thrust on the different aspects that Swami gives is different.
Right.
Because Swami never answers the question, he's always answering the questioner. Therefore, this conversations with Sai becomes so much more special, because I'm sure that as Swami has always done, here also Swami will be answering the questioner, and therefore even as we read the questions, Swami's answers will answer the questions that arise in our minds. Because of which, what I say here during the satsang or what Prem say here might be slightly different or totally different from what happens to you as you are listening. All are equally valid. It is not as if Prem and myself are some authorities here to tell that this is the meaning. We will just be sharing our understanding, our feeling and our experience. And as always, we welcome all of you also to share in your inputs, thoughts, suggestions, experiences by writing to us at listener@radiosai.org. We will definitely take them up for discussion, because after all, this is afternoon satsang.
So I think with that, we'll probably dive into the first question that he's asking. For many of us, the question itself might need a lot of explanation, because it's a very profound question. And as we spoke about Hislop himself last week, I think what needs to be kept in mind is the questions are coming from somebody who has sought these answers for quite some time. So, in fact, if you look at some of our Upanishads, most of the Upanishads are actually in the form of questions and answers. And you would see that the questions itself suggest that there is a load of thinking which has gone behind the question itself. And it starts from a very, very high level. In fact, one of the Upanishads starts with, who is the one who thinks with my mind? Who is the one who sees with my eye? Which automatically means that you have understood that you are not the mind, you are not the senses.
Mm.
So it starts from a very high level. So similarly, I think Hislop's questions also start from a pretty decent level of understanding, if you could put it that way.
And he comes bang onto the target, you know, like he just comes without much introduction.
Absolutely, That's how actually the Upanishads are also. They're very, very straight, and the answers also are pretty much straight. The difference between Puranas and Upanishads are there, is that the questions are straight, answers are straight. And Puranas will tell you'll have a serial, and then at the end of the serial, the message is presented to you.
It's more like for the beginner's course. Mm. And this is like, you just leave aside the fluff. I want the bang on target answer. That's how it is. And so I shall just read out the first question that Hislop has recorded in his book, Conversations with Sathya Sai. So the first question is, we do not perceive life with absolute clarity, and yet we are acting all the time. Unclear action makes for a confused life. We are unhappy about that confusion, and in an effort to remove that, we accumulate ideas of truth, God and reality. But those imaginings do not remove the confusion. Life is still confused. So the question is, what is a big factor that prevents us from seeing the truth of life clearly? Now that is Hislop's question. If I make an attempt to summarize it, It is like, when we see life, we act, but our actions are confused because we don't have clarity. To get clarity, we think of God, truth, reality. But I still don't know whether even this God, truth and reality is the truth or is it my own imagination. So how am I to see the absolute truth when I am so confused and I don't even know whether the basis of the basis which I am holding on to clear my confusion, whether that's also true or my imagination? That is his question.
Right. And then he goes on to say, what is that factor that prevents us from seeing the truth of life clearly? I mean, as we said, you know, this question itself is very, very important, because the way I look at it, most of us, we think, you know, when you talk about clarity, when you talk about concepts, we think that these concepts can wait till later. What is God? What is life? What is the purpose of life? What is right and wrong? We can think of this after retirement. But the fact is, you need that information to do the right action during your active years. When you're making decisions in the corporate, when you're making decisions in your family, when you're making decisions in your career, in society, that's when you need clarity. But we have this idea of thinking that we'll seek the clarity after we are done with all our actions, right? And I think that is one
it's
of
like
the...
like putting the cart
before the horse. So he's saying that we need clarity for doing our actions. And because we don't have the clarity, our actions are bad. Then we introduce some of these concepts which we don't understand. I mean, concepts of truth and God, which I have no understanding of, but I think we do that many times even when you're solving problems in physics or mathematics. You know, we make assumptions, we introduce concepts, we introduce constants which we have not defined. We'll say that, let's say that this term is a constant, so that we can solve the rest of the equation and then get back to the constant. Typically, that's what we do, and that's what he's saying, that we introduce these concepts we don't understand properly. We are not even sure whether these concepts are standards or just our imaginations we have brought in to fill them. So at the end of it, we are ending up doing more confused action. So what is it that stops us from getting this clarity? Because the more you do this over and over again, you realize that you need that clarity even to act. So where do you get that clarity from?
You know, it reminds me of an example that Swami would quote in his discourses. Swami would say that when Krishna goes to advise Duryodhana in the Mahabharata of the wrong that he is doing, that the adharmic path that he is taking, Duryodhana replies that, Krishna, it is not as if I don't know what is dharma. I know what is dharma. It is simply that I am unable to act according to dharma. That's all. And that is presented as a wrong example for all of us. But today when we look at Duryodhana, in spite of being the villain of the Mahabharata, he definitely at least had clarity. He knew what is dharma, and he knew that what he is doing is not dharma. It's just that he had a sense of helplessness. If we look at this question that Hislop is asking on behalf of mankind, if I may say so, it is that mankind is helpless, but also lacking clarity. You know, it is almost as if we are in a stage that is worse than what Duryodhana was in. Duryodhana was helpless, but he had clarity. It was just a matter of him being able to act on that clarity. Here Hislop is saying that we don't have clarity, we are confused, we are helpless. So what is the factor that makes us like this? That is the question that he is asking. And Swami begins by, you know, it looks as if like Swami is trying to start by answering what is imagination, what is real.
Right. We'll read out the entire answer which Swami gives, and then we'll break it down and we'll try to understand it better. The reply that Swami gives is, you say that truth, God and reality are imagination. Why do you think they are imagination? They are not. Time, work, reason and experience, these four in harmony together, that is truth. When the four are found to be out of harmony, then you feel it is untruth. An example, yesterday you came to Bangalore and from there to Puttaparthi by car. Travel is work. It took you 4 hours to come from Bangalore. That is time. You came here to see Swami. That is the reason. Have you seen him? Having seen him, you felt happy. And that is the result. On the other hand, Last night, you dreamed you were in America and were shopping. In this, the four factors were not involved. There was no work, there was no time expended, and where is the result? This is untruth. That experience was imagination, only mind work. This is the difference between truth and imagination. So this was the answer that Swami gives. I think clearly what the first thing which Swami is doing is, Swami is defining what is imagination, because he uses that word when he says that, Swami, we bring in concepts like truth, God and reality, but those are imaginations, we imagine them, and so we get confused further. So Swami starts by explaining what is imagination and what is reality.
Absolutely. In fact, Swami says that if you are able to have four of them, which is time, kala, work, karma, reason, karana, and the experience, the prabhava or whatever you may say. When these four are there, then you know that it is not imagination. And he gives a beautiful example of the dream. In the dream, there is nothing like time. There is nothing like reason. There is nothing like action. There is nothing there like that. And therefore, it is imagination. Swami says, when these four are present, and Swami doesn't stop at these four being present, when these four are in harmony and they are present, then you know that it is real. Because in the dream also sometimes there might arise one of these, you know, karana. You know, in the dream also you might be able to find some reason for something. But the kala, karma, karana and the experience of the dream, all the four will not be in harmony. Then you know for sure that it's imagination. So, in the first place, from a worldly perspective, Swami makes it clear what is imagination and what is real. And that is real which has these four, which is kala, karana, karma and the experience.
Right. In fact, this particular point which Swami says, because here Swami says experience, but I think a couple of other discourses Swami speaks of the same concept as kala, karma, karana and kartavyam. The reason why Swami says kartavyam is, I think that's the other aspect which Swami explains. Even when Swami speaks of an avatar, Swami would say that God is absolute. God is not bound by time and space.
Mm-hmm.
Swami would say, but when God operates in a human form, when God comes down to a human form, or is operating something in the human level, even God confines to these four qualities of kala, karma, kartavyam and karana. Which means his action should be defining all of these four and should be in harmony with all these four. So if you look at it, why should God's grace depend on something? Why should God's action depend on time? And, you know, that's some question we often ask. So I would say, no, I've come into this frame which is defined by these four qualities. And even God will act like this. And that is the lesson for mankind, that as long as you're in a human form, you'll have to follow these four. Because this is what defines the physical existence.
It is like, you know, again going back to our traditional fallback example of a drama or a movie or even a video game. It is all false, but still there are rules, there are conditions, there are boundaries. You know, even in a science fiction movie or a fantasy movie like, say, Superman or Spider-Man. Yeah, Superman can fly anywhere and do anything, but even that is a certain rule. It's not as if everybody starts flying like Superman and Superman has a weakness. So, even in fantasy movies, we build in some kind of limitation and we bring in some kind of rules and constructs so that there is a particular structure and shape for the movie. Otherwise, I mean, it won't be a movie after all. It'll just be God knows what. It'll be imagination. If you have a movie that has no logical flow, it has no reason, anybody can do anything at any time, suddenly a tree can go downwards. I mean, if it's not following any rules, I don't think that movie will have any viewers. Nobody would like to watch a movie which they will call as a waste of time or meaningless or makes no sense. So therefore, for anything to make sense and logic, we need some kind of a construct and structure. And So too it is in the world. And as you rightly said, Swami says, even when the avatar comes into the world, it comes into this construct. It comes into this movie or it comes into this drama or comes into this video game. The avatar also follows the kala, karana, karma and kartavya, which is time, cause, action and duty. And that's why in the discourse on the 24th of May 1991, Swami says that the goal of human life is to harmonize time, action, cause and duty. Kala, Karma, Karana and Kartavya. So, you know, this is, it's like Swami is building up for the answer for Hislop. So first of all, Swami is saying, don't think that God and reality, all this is imagination. It is not. It is not imagination, because anything that has these four is real. When it doesn't have these four only, it is imagination. Because if we think of a dream, in the dream it is difficult to say what is the time. You know, Swami would also give many examples like that you sleep and you 40 years are spent in your dream, but when you wake up, 40 minutes have only just passed. So time loses its meaning in dream. There is no reason in the dream. For instance, you find, you know, I get these dreams where I am in a kind of a land where all animals have escaped from their cages, you know. This is a recurrent dream theme for me. So every time I get up from my dream, I am in a state of fear and there's a little sweat because, you know, I see lions everywhere. I see tiger, bears, all these carnivores all around. But actually, when I look back, I'm unable to do it. But if I'm able to do it in my dream, if I'm just able to ask, how is it that there are lions and tigers everywhere here? If I try to find the reason for it, I think the dream will collapse because there is no reason. Karana is not there in the dream state. But yeah, sadly, I'm unable to do that. And that's why I need to wake up out of my dream in order to realize that it was a dream. But it's a very beautiful definition that Swami has given to distinguish possibly between dream state, imagination and physical reality. Physical reality has Kala, Karma, Karana and Kartavya.
And this is a very important point which Swami is making, because, you know, on one hand you say that everything is a dream, life is a dream, realize it, you know, that's what Swami says. That does not mean that, you know, this is, in that sense, it is a dream, that it is unreal, you can do anything, you can get away with it. You know, that is why I think Swami is very, very specific in his command. It is not about, there is no rules in this world, everything is a dream, everything is an illusion, so do whatever you want. No, even this illusion is defined by something. And that in comparison to the dream you can understand. That's why Swami says this. In fact, we were discussing the other day, there's this movie called Inception. Mm. It's all about going into your dream and going into another person's dream and then...
Dream in a dream.
Right. The whole idea is you kind of sow a thought in the person's dream so that that kind of becomes a reality in real life or something like that. Then they go a dream inside a dream and all that. Of course, a lot of scientific sci-fi mumbo-jumbo is there. But in that, they make this point. You know, surprisingly, they've got this right. When you're in a dream, you actually, it's so real that you don't know that's a dream. And that's how all of us dream, right? When we are dreaming, we are almost like sure that that's really happening.
Hmm.
So they say that how do you know what you're in is a dream or it's a real thing? So one of the ways they suggest is try to think how you entered that place where you are. Like suppose they're sitting at a coffee shop or they're sitting in a restaurant. So they ask, do you remember how you entered this place? If they're not able to remember, they say that then it's a dream. Like what Swami is saying, that you don't know why you have come, you don't know how you have come, you don't know the time that you have spent. So if you're able to look at any of these things and those factors are not coherent, then you know it's a dream. And Swami is saying, but the real life, all of these are coherent. I am sitting here, I know exactly how I woke up in the morning and what are the things I did to be here at 12:30. Right?
Correct.
But if I'm dreaming of sitting and doing an afternoon satsang, I'll not know that sequence at all. So Swami is saying that you've lived through it so you can see the Kala, Karana, Kartavya. And Swami is saying, so don't dismiss the wakeful state as a dream like your dream state. It is a dream, but it's different. Right? And that is why you need to work through the rules and try to transcend it, not get caught up in this idea that just like a dream, this is also a dream, so let me do whatever I want and get away with it.
You know, speaking of being aware that it's a dream, that's a superb state, and there is a term for it in the modern day world. They call it lucid dreaming. Lucid dreaming is when in your dream, you are aware that it's a dream.
Mm-hmm.
I got introduced and interested in this term recently when I had been to Singapore. I met this lady, mm-hmm. and this lady was narrating some really fantastic experiences. So she discovered that she has this ability to do lucid dreaming, and which is in her dream, she knows that it's a dream. So I asked her, how is it that you know that it's a dream? She said, for example, when I slept in my bed at night, this was where my head was, this was where my leg was. And now when I'm waking up, I'm seeing that the head and leg have switched positions. They're in the opposite side. My pillow is on the opposite side. So I know that this is not my actual bed. So therefore it must be a dream. So that was fantastic. Then she said that in the beginning she had a problem called sleep paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
What a sleep paralysis? She says that she wakes up, but since it's a dream, so I mean she has woken up in her dream, but since it's a dream, she has no control over her body and she's feeling paralyzed. And in her dream, she knows that this is a dream and therefore the only solution to my paralysis, imagine if I'm dreaming that I'm paralyzed, I'll be thinking of going to a doctor possibly or getting some cure or treatment. But she's telling that all I have to do to get out of this paralysis is wake up. And even as she was telling this to me, I was feeling thrilled because, you know, when Swami says you wake up, you'll realize this entire thing is a dream. Of course, Swami has clearly shown that it's different from a dreaming dream versus this waking dream. But if the waking dream is also similar to a dream, you just have to wake out of all your sorrows and sufferings. So she's telling that she feels that I just have to wake up and my paralysis will be gone, but she's not able to wake up. So she then thought that let me not try to wake up because I don't know how to wake up. Instead of that, let me just try to go ahead and do some things, whatever. So then she said that she walked to her mother's room so that she can, you know, so she woke up and she knows that she's dreaming. So she walked to her mother's room and then the dream ended and she woke up in her bed. So she was glad that she didn't have to suffer paralysis. So just out of curiosity, she got up and again went to her mother's room. And then she says something strange happened because she actually woke up now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing that when she thought that she had actually woken up and walked to her mother's room was a dream.
Okay.
So she actually woke up. Then she said, oh my God. Then she went. Again, she actually woke up. And she said it happened over and over again 4-5 times. And then so much so that when she actually woke up, she didn't know whether she had woken up or she started pinching herself. And then she said she got scared that, oh my God, I'm going to get trapped. I'm getting trapped in a region where I don't know whether it's a dream or it's reality.
Mm.
Very strange and bizarre it was as I was listening to her. She then said, I decided let me do something fantastic, which I can't do in real life. And then I'll know that if I'm doing something fantastic, I know that it's a dream. It'll be a dream and therefore I will not lose my consciousness or I will not be confused whether it's dream or real. So she says that time when she dreamt, she became aware that she's dreaming. Now she thought to know when the dream ends and when the reality begins or whatever, she decided, okay, I'll do one thing, I'll go to Puttaparthi and see Swami, which in the case of the real world now is not possible because it's post-2011 and you're in Singapore, it's not like you can just come to Puttaparthi. But she just went and she was the next moment in the airport, again without Kala, Karana, Kartavya, she's just there in the airport and she has taken off. And she lands in Puttaparthi. It takes about 5 to 5.5 hours. She lands in Bangalore. It takes 5 to 5.5 hours actually to travel by flight. But, you know, again, there's no Kala in the dream. So she zips through that. She lands. But she's telling as she's coming to Puttaparthi, there is some block that's preventing her even in the dream. You know, she's not able to come to Puttaparthi. The dream entirely collapses. And she gets a message in her dream. She knows that it's a dream and she's getting the message. And the message is, you can't come to Puttaparthi unless I call you. And with that, she wakes up. So, it was so fantastic. You know, so many meanings, so many messages. What, the first thing that struck me was, oh my God. When you say that you can't dream of coming to Puttaparthi without Swami's will, it's actually literally true. You know, even when you know that you're dreaming. So, it makes so much sense now with that in background. It makes so much sense when Swami says that in your dream, there's no Kala, Karana, Karma, Kartavya. And that is imagination. And though we become aware that it's a dream is an amazing thing. It's only the first step in actually achieving the ultimate. But nevertheless, it's a very important step. And let's see. So that is the answer that Swami gives in terms of what is imagination and what is real, which actually leads to the next question by Hislop. But before we go into that next question, we'll take a quick little break. And on the other side of the break, we will continue with this question and answer session.
Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Baba, take me away. Sai Baba, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Baba, take me away. Sai Baba, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Baba, take me away. Sai Baba, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Swami, take me away. Oh, Swami, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Swami, take me away. Oh, Swami, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me bathe in the sweetness of your smile. Oh, Baba, take me away. Sai Baba, take me away. Take me away, won't you carry me? Let me rest in your arms for a while.
Welcome back, dear listeners. As we said, we will be continuing with the question and answer session. So, the next question Hislop asks Swami when Swami gives that answer is that, but truth, that is in terms of work, time, reason and result. You look around the world and you see those things in operation and the world is in a mess. So, there must be more to it than that. From what I understand, Hislop is telling Swami that, Swami, it's great that you have given a definition between the imaginary world and the real world, the world of the dreams and the real physical world as we see it. But then, Swami, if this is the truth, is this messy world that we see with our physical eyes, is this the truth? Can the truth be so messy and so, you know, not so grand? Because the truth, what we think of is the absolute, the grand, that is the kind of word we associate with truth. But Swami, you are saying that thing that has kala, karana, karma and experience, kartavya, that is what is the truth. But things that have that are themselves so messy. Are they the truth? Is that the truth? That is his next question.
Right. Interestingly, I don't know where this question comes from, but the way Swami has defined whatever he said about the four aspects, Swami actually did not say truth. Swami said the difference between reality and imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Where Swami said truth, God, reality are imagination, Swami is saying it's not so.
Okay, correct.
So I think the question of truth he is asking is, he probably has understood that Swami is saying this is truth.
Uh-huh, yes.
So partly it may be
there.
Because of that confusion. And the other thing which Swami was saying, I mean, in this one is, Swami is saying that you think that these are imagination, but they're not imagination, because anything that happens in the wakeful state is actually real, in that sense. Real with reference to the wakeful state. I think that's what Swami says here. And typically, like what you were talking about, that lucid dreaming. In fact, that's what it is. You know, the I think some devotee, Swami was explaining this concept of dream and wakeful state. So Swami was asking that devotee, is there anything that you can do in your dream that can make you wake up? Typically, like what that sister was experiencing. There's actually nothing that you can do in your dream to wake up. So Swami is saying there's nothing you can do in this world to wake up from this dream of in the world also.
You have to go to a level that is...
Right. Somebody who is awake only has to wake you up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's so profound. But Swami is saying, but when you have the realization, as you were saying about lucid dreaming, when you're dreaming, if you have the belief that this is a dream, you actually can become more relaxed about the dream also.
Correct. You won't get scared of the lions and tigers.
If some disaster is there to happen, you'll not be scared of it. You'll just say, okay, it's just a dream, let's go through it. And that's why Swami says, life is a dream, don't wake up from it, realize it. Because you can't wake up from it from what you do in your dream. But the moment that realization comes, then you actually become so much more lighter. So the definition that Swami is giving you is so beautiful of what is reality. But then he's asking about this, as we were saying, the truth. Again, from the misunderstanding that, you know, if this is reality, if this is truth, then why is it not perfect? And again, that perfection becomes a subjective thing. Perfection becomes a...
What is perfection?
What is your perception of perfection, right?
And that is what Swami answers also. I'll just read out what Swami answers to that question. The question that, is this messy world that we see with our physical eyes, is that the truth? Swami answers, when you don't have absolute faith in the result, then doubt arises. An example. Now it is daylight and the objects in the room are seen very clearly and there is no doubt in regard to them. At night, when it's fully dark and you have to grope around and you do not see any of the objects, there is no doubt about that situation. But at dusk, when it is half light and half dark, doubt can arise and you may see a rope and imagine it to be a snake and be frightened. Light is not full and the vision is not clear. Full light is wisdom, full darkness is ignorance. Doubt arises when there is half darkness and half light. The half light of wisdom and the half darkness of ignorance. When you have partial ignorance and partial wisdom, then you have doubts. Now you are in the middle stage, where you have a little bit of wisdom and also some ignorance, where ignorance and wisdom are mixed. You are not fully experienced. When you have proper experience, the doubt will vanish. Because you are not fully experienced, you are having this doubt.
I mean, that's a very beautiful explanation that Swami is giving here, in the sense of, one thing is, and of course the way I'm looking at it is, from the point of view, the question that he is asking, if everything has a reason and a perfect flow of, you know, something you do, it happens. Mm-hmm. I think automatically the question comes, why do we see good people suffering? Why do we see bad people getting away with the bad they do? Why do we see innocent children suffering? Mm. I mean, you're not able to see a reason for that. Just like how we told the explanation over the dream, there's no reason for why something is what it is, or there's no reason or methodology how you have arrived at something. I think sometimes when you look around at the world, you feel that. There's no reason why they should be like this. There's no reason why a good person should do something good with a noble intention and then should face obstacles.
Hmm.
Somebody gets away by, you know, they've connived and they've come with a bad plan and then they're able to get through with it. That's something which we see every day. So where is the reason in that? Where is the, when you talk of truth and goodness and God and all of that, these are all concepts. If they are real, if they are what govern the real life, then why do we see this kind of absurdities and, inequalities in life?
Right? Things that are illogical.
Right. Mm. So he's saying that where is the truth? Where is that? Well, I mean, that is what is leading us to messiness. But then Swami is giving this beautiful example of when there is complete darkness and complete, brightness. When there's complete darkness, you're not sure of anything. You're actually in an explorative mood. When there's complete brightness, there's total clarity. When there is half dark, and that's why when Swami says, there's a snake lying there or a rope lying there, you get a confusion. And sometime back I was seeing this movie about a certain era in England, the 1500s and 1600s. It was really surprising actually to see that, to contrast it with our modern day world. And it was about a legal case which, somebody is called to stand witness and all that. And they are so scared to take a oath on the Bible and say lies. Because they are so sure that if I tell lies, taking oath on the Bible, I'm damning my soul. And, it's like the clarity is so much that stops people from doing bad. But now if you look at it, we still have that concept that if you do bad or if you tell a lie, you're going to be punished. But we are not sure of that really. We have, half belief in that and half belief. We don't have belief in that because of the things we are seeing in the world. So that's what Swami is saying, that, if you have full clarity or full faith that it is going to be like that, you'll have no worries. But you know that it works, but you're not sure if it'll work this time or, when it'll going to work. And Swami is saying that is when the clarity actually is missing.
And therefore, the world appears messy to you because of the twilight conditions that exist. It's like ignorance is bliss, absolute darkness is bliss, because as you said, we are exploratory, we'll go clear carefully. Bright light, everything is crystal clear, so there's no problem. It's only the twilight conditions that create a mess. And for me, it seems as if Swami is saying that, dear Hislop, when you say that what the physical eyes see as a messy world, is that the truth? The answer to that is the physical world, what you're seeing, it is not messy. You're seeing it as messy because of the twilight conditions that exist. And what are the twilight? What are the twilight condition? The twilight condition is it's not that you're absolutely ignorant and therefore you're blissful. I can only think of, possibly substituting ignorance with innocence. If you take a little baby, it has no pressures of anything. It's absolutely blissful always, whether it's a baby of a prince or a pauper. It's because ignorance is bliss. But as the baby grows up, it starts gaining knowledge, wisdom, importance of money, importance of this, importance of that. In the ultimate sense, we know that all of that doesn't matter. Only God matters. Only Swami matters. That even today I know, Prem, theoretically, and I'm sure you also know it. And yet, we cannot live with that. I still need to pursue my family. I need to pursue my money. I'm doing all that. That's possibly because I'm not in a fully bright and light state. If I'm absolutely clear, then I'll actually not bother about anything. I will just allow God to act through me. I will just be a conduit through which God's will manifests. But no, I put in my own little will. I know I need this. I need to do that. I need to do this. That's because though there is knowledge, it's only half wisdom. It is still half dark, half ignorance. And therefore, the baby is blissful, the jnani is blissful. But people like us stuck in the middle feel that the world is so messy, it is so illogical, it doesn't follow this. That's because we are in a state of half ignorance and half wisdom. I was reminded of that beautiful incident with Professor U.S. Rao that right. You narrated. I think you should just narrate that, then I'll continue.
Because what Swami is saying in the end of that answer is pertaining to that, where Swami says, you're not, now you are in the middle stage when you have this little bit of wisdom and also some ignorance, where ignorance and wisdom are mixed. You're not totally experienced. When you have proper experience, the doubt will vanish.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is precisely what was the interaction with Professor U.S. Rao, the former principal of our Prashant Nilayam campus. He was narrating, another teacher who was in that interview was narrating this, where Swami had called a few teachers for an interview, and Swami said, if you have any questions, you can ask. So he had raised this question that, Swami, you say that the world is illusory and power and wealth and all of these are illusory, you should not run after it. So he said that, Swami, that you are divine, we have accepted you as our guru and our God. So whatever you say must be the truth. So when Swami says this, we know that it is the truth. But why is it that still we run after money and power and all of this? Even though we have intellectually accepted that this is the truth because Swami says so.
And we have accepted Swami.
Right. And then, you know, Swami tells him that, see, at some point in your childhood, you would have burnt your finger in the fire. Right. Once you have experienced that putting your hand in the fire is going to burn your finger, how much ever anybody else coaxes you to put your hand in the fire, you will not do it. Because that has become an experiential knowledge to you. Right?
Swami experiential said, learning, correct.
Learning, right? Even if I pull your hand and put it in the fire, you will wriggle out. Swami is saying, that is what happens when you have experience, and that experience results in a certain knowledge. But when it comes to me telling you something, Swami says that you know, out of courtesy that you accept it, but you're not really experienced that this is the reality. And so till you have that experience, you will not be able to act on that. That knowledge will not be something which guides your actions.
It is so important, you know, theoretically saying that God is the ultimate, money, relationship, youth, all of this fade away, they're of no use. Versus actually living it. It is only when I get a real life experience which hits and, you know, it strikes to me that, you know, how much ever money you accumulate is useless. How much ever power you accumulate is useless. Whatever pride you take in your fit body, it's all useless. Ma kuru dhana jana yavana garvam, as Shankaracharya said, that unless that experience hits. And not just that experience, the other experience that, you know, once you get God, everything you've got, because all that you're seeking in life through all your action, thoughts and words is happiness, and happiness is union with God. Once these two experiences strike, automatically you lose the interest in pursuing the world. And I'm reminded of the experience of Mr. Harihara Krishnan. He happened to be the first Indian who was evacuated and who returned from Kuwait in the 1990s, when Kuwait was invaded by Iraq. So, and all the people there were trapped. It's a lovely long story, and I think it has been elaborately documented on our website, the experience of Mr. Harihara Krishnan. But there's one particular episode that happens in that entire journey. He actually traveled from Kuwait to Jordan via road, and from Jordan flew back to India. And he was the first Indian, and that's why there are interviews of him in many Indian national newspapers as the first Indian who returned from the war zone. So he says that he came across one small inn. It was not a posh hotel or restaurant, one small inn, and all the Kuwaitis were terribly scared and afraid because Iraqi army was invading Kuwait.
Okay.
So not only were the Kuwaitis afraid of Iraqis, the common people in Iraq were also afraid of the Kuwaitis, because they felt that if I do any kind of help to any Kuwaiti, I might land in the line of fire.
Right.
So in that sense, Harihara Krishnan was blessed that he was an Indian. So he went and he said that at that inn, he wanted to buy some bread loaf and water, and he gave some Kuwaiti dinars, and Kuwaiti dinar even to this day is one of the most valuable currencies.
Okay.
You know, if we check the conversion rates, it's one of the most powerful currencies. And he had a few Kuwaiti dinars. He said he gave him a 20 dinar, and he got his bread and water and tons of Iraqi dinars in change. And then he says this gentleman comes, this Kuwaiti man, he's having his wife and a kid or something, and it's evident that he's Kuwaiti, and he says, give me bread and water. And that Iraqi innkeeper says, no, I can't, you're a Kuwaiti, no, you go away. Please don't be here, you go away, I can't give you. And in front of Harihara Krishnan, he opens up a suitcase, briefcase, which is filled with Kuwaiti dinars. You know, quick calculation, you know that you can buy a house and a car with that possibly. That is the amount of wealth in that. And he says, you take all this, but please give bread and water, I need it. Nobody else is ready to give me. He says, instead of taking the money and giving him that, the innkeeper picks up a phone and says, if you don't step out now, I'm going to call the police. And that man rushes out, and Harihara Krishnan observes. He says that having seen how worthless that Kuwaiti dinar is, that man still locks up his briefcase, holds his Kuwaiti dinar and runs. And I felt so poignant, and I felt the futility of all this. And he says, at that moment I decided and I prayed. I said, Swami, please give me that wealth which holds currency in your kingdom. Otherwise, what is the use of any wealth which doesn't hold currency in your kingdom? It is of no use. And such was the impact of this experience that he actually gave up his profession. He gave up his career. He became a freelancer who just does bits and odds here and there. He decided that I will try to earn that currency which has, that wealth that has currency in God's kingdom, which is love and tyaga, seva and sacrifice. And that's how he has led his life from then on. He gave up his career as a chartered accountant. It's amazing. Now, many chartered accountants, many engineers, many doctors like us may hear of this experience. We may get inspired also, but will we be able to actually give up our careers and say, yes, this is what it is? For that, I think we need that personal experience. That is what Swami is referring to here. You are not fully experienced. And that is the reason, though we know, as that beautiful experience of U.S. Rao sir also showed us, that is the reason why, though we intellectually and theoretically know, till that experience hits us, I think we'll be floundering in that manner. Therefore, it's almost like it's time to gird up our loins and pull up our socks and try to yearn and pine and crave for that experience, after which nothing else will be needed.
And I think, when Hislop is saying here that, Swami, we have created these concepts of truth, God and reality, and we try to seek clarity through them. That's what has happened. You know, somebody who has experienced truth, God and reality has given you those concepts. It's not like the concepts are imaginations. Someone else's experience has led them to understand that these are the things which actually bring clarity to our actions and the world we see. But for you and me, they are still concepts. They are not my knowledge still. You know, they are not my experiential knowledge. And Swami is saying that they are not imagination. You think they are imagination, and that's what is causing the problem. And that is because of these, you know, half knowledge and half understanding that you have.
It is this half knowledge that makes you see the world as a very illogical and messy place. Otherwise, right. It is perfect. In fact, Swami goes ahead and gives an... He has not completed his answer still. Swami goes on and he continues. He says, a small example. While suffering from malaria, you eat a sweet, but feel that it has a bitter taste. It was not that the sweet was bitter, but in your experience it was bitter. It is not the fault of the sweet. Ignorance is a disease like malaria. And the cure for this disease of ignorance is sadhana. Man has doubt only when he does not know the truth. Once you experience the truth, doubt will vanish. Truth is one, and for all time truth is truth. Whatever changes, know that as untruth. This is what Swami says, and he goes further ahead, dilating on that point, saying, once you were small and now you have grown bigger. That is also untruth. Where is the body of the 10-year-old? All has merged into the present body. First untruth. Then, when we have the experience, we know the truth. Darkness and light are not different. They are one only. A small example. Last night you ate some fruit. In the morning it became stool and you passed it out. It was fruit yesterday. But the bad and good are all the same, only one. In one form it was fruit, the other form it was stool. It is the same with light and darkness. When the light comes, the darkness goes. But really, the darkness does not go to any place and the light does not come or go to any place. When one comes, the other is unknown. It does not go anywhere.
I think this answer is like multiple layers of answers that Swami has given here. One of the things is, you know, what Hislop raises this question of truth, where I was saying that maybe he has misunderstood what Swami is referring to as imagination versus reality, what Swami is defining. And then he raises this point of truth. Swami is explaining why, even though the wakeful state is real because of karma, kala, kartavya, it is unreal because of its evanescence or its ephemeral nature. Because the definition of truth which Swami gives is Trikala Badhyam Satyam, that which cannot be modified by time, modified by past, present and future. And Swami is saying, why, even though this present, you know, wakeful state defines these four karma, kala, kartavyam and karana, it is unreal is because of its changing nature. And Swami gives the example of what was a fruit yesterday becomes stool tomorrow, and what is childhood has become old age, and it is constantly changing. And at that moment it appears true, but it is not the truth, because in the overall sense, nothing is constant. Everything is changing.
The real world as we see it is dual. And that is the reason we feel it is messy. You know, when we see it in the eyes of duality, There is light, there is darkness. There is happiness, there is sorrow. There is pain, there is pleasure. And that's why we feel that things are illogical. And what Swami is saying is that the real world, you see it as a dual world. The only way to transcend the duality, the only way, only solution is to transcend that duality. That is so beautiful. That is what Swami explains. Because it appears, something appears bitter, but it is not actually bitter. It is a problem with the tongue. It is the way the tongue is perceiving it. The tongue is suffering from a disease and therefore it is perceiving it like that. Once the tongue is cured of the disease, it will perceive it as sweet. All, everything will be sweet only. Nothing will be bitter. So I think Swami has made use of two different sense organs. One, the eye, saying that when there is some problem in the eye or when there is no sufficient light. Yeah, you see a rope and mistake it for a snake. You get scared, you get confused, you get doubts. Similarly, if the tongue is having a problem, it's not able to experience the sweet. It is not the problem of the sweet, it is not the problem of the rope. It is the way we are perceiving. So therefore, our perception has to change. And that is a very, very fundamental change. Because as long as we perceive the real world, reality as a dual world, we will be suffering from this always. The only way is to transcend this duality. I think we can discuss a lot more on this point. It's so beautiful. But dear listeners, we'll take a quick little break. And on the other side of the break, we will dilate a little more on this point before going to the next question.
I'm not
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were discussing the first conversation that was recorded in the Conversations of with Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba by John Hislop. And Swami's first reply which Swami gave, Swami defined the difference between what is imagination and what is reality. Because that's the first point that he raises, that, you know, are we imagining concepts and is that the reason for confusion? Swami says, no, imagination is completely different, you got it wrong. And Swami is saying, dream is what is imagination, where you don't have the concepts of time and reason and duty and cause. But when you talk of truth, Swami says, that is beyond even these four of karma, kala and kartavya. And Swami says that as long, and this difference you will find only when you have experiential knowledge. And Swami would often say this, you know, do you have this experience of first time understanding what a mirage is? You know, when you're told that a mirage is something which looks like water.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we are kids, when you first time see it, you will be really struck by how real that looks when you're driving in a car on a long road on a sunny day. It really looks like water. But Swami is telling in a discourse a very beautiful point. Swami says that, you know, when you're stuck in a desert, especially in a desert, they say that, you know, it really messes up with your mind. When you're so thirsty, you're looking for water. And when you see a mirage, you really think that there's water there, then you run towards it. So Swami is saying that once this concept of a mirage is experientially understood, that you've seen a mirage and you understand that how really like water it looks when it is not water at all. Then Swami says the next time you see a mirage, the experience of a mirage does not vanish. It's not like after that you will not see mirages anymore.
Mm.
You will continue to see the mirage, but you will not be fooled by a mirage anymore. And that's what Swami is saying here, that once the truth is experienced, it's not that the duality vanishes. The duality continues to exist, but it does not fool you anymore.
It's like we often think that because of the way we depict self-realized people in cartoons, whether not cartoons, in comics, we always think that if a person is self-realized, he'll be possibly levitating or will have a halo around his head. It's not like that. In the same way, as you rightly said, it's not as if that everything changes off, but it's almost like the paradoxical statement where nothing changes, yet everything has changed.
Right.
That is what happens. So beautifully, from the first question that Hislop has asked, Swami has differentiated between imagination, reality and truth. Because it looks as if that reality was mixed up with truth, and therefore Swami had to explain what is imagination, what is reality, and then what is truth. And truth, as I said, is something beyond kala, karana, karma and kartavya. And I remember this episode, Dr. T. Ravi Kumar, current warden of the Brindavan Hostel. I think I've narrated this episode many times because it's so beautiful. When he was doing his doctorate, he had come, he was doing it in the, I think, Shri Krishna Devaraya University in
Anantapur,
and he had come to Puttaparthi to have Swami's darshan. One day Swami had called him in for an interview along with a few others, and Swami wanted to show off his student, and therefore Swami asked Ravi Kumar, sir, why have you come to Puttaparthi? And he replied, Swami, to have your darshan. Swami said, why you want to have darshan? He said, Swami, because it makes me blissful. It gives me bliss. Swami asked him, does it give you bliss or does it give you happiness? Then he replied, Swami, it gives me bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Swami asked, what is the difference between happiness and bliss? And Ravi Kumar sir confesses, you know, that it was only Swami's inner prompting that he could come up with an answer, which when we look at it today, it is so beautiful. He said, Swami, when I'm hungry, if I'm given a gulab jamun, my mouth will water, I'll feel so happy and I'll eat it, my hunger will be satiated and I'll feel happy. But Swami, 5 years, 10 years later down the line, when I'm feeling hungry, if somebody doesn't give me food, I will still have the pain and the pangs of hunger. On top of that, if somebody reminds me that, remember last time you felt so hungry as if that gulab jamun was given, that memory of that episode doesn't help me in any manner. In fact, it makes my condition even more worse because it reminds me of the contrast. But Swami, today I am having your darshan. 10 years later, by chance, if I am in a place where I am not able to have your darshan, if I go back 10 years in time and think of this moment when I'm having a darshan, even 10 years later, Swami, it will give me the same joy as it is giving me now here. That is bliss, Swami, while eating that gulab jamun is happiness. This is the difference between bliss and happiness. This is how he answered Swami, and Swami was very happy. And you know, Swami paraded him in front of those VIPs there. If we look at the answer that he gave, it is so clear, you know. Here also, this something which is bliss is something that is related to truth, because bliss is permanent and bliss is trikala badhyam, like truth. And we can see that just like truth, bliss also transcends time. It is the same. 5 years, 10 years from now, it is the same. That is the reason why even today, you know, Radio Sai gets letters of gratitude from everyone. You know, we are talking about those glorious days with Swami, how it was. It is not as if what are you people doing? You are sprinkling salt on our wounds. We are missing Swami and you are building up contrast. No. People are grateful for this. Why? Because what we are deriving from this is actually bliss. It is something that is permanent nature. It is not like that gulab jamun. And that is how it is. When we say it is beyond kala, karana, karma, we see here that it's beyond kala. You know, speaking of being beyond karana, I am reminded of another little episode that happened in the interview room, this time with one of our research scholars, when Swami asked this research scholar, what is bliss? You know, same question, what is bliss? See, the way Swami explains, that's why I said in the beginning that it is not as if Swami answers the question, but Swami answers the questioner. We heard one definition of bliss. Here, when Swami asked him what is bliss, this research scholar is very well read in different scriptures and Upanishads and all that, and he gave many, many answers, but Swami kept saying, no, kadu, kadu, kane, kadu, not at all that answer. Finally, Swami gave a simple one-liner, beautiful one-liner. Swami told him, causeless happiness is bliss. When you're feeling happy, ask why you're feeling happy. If you're able to find a cause, then you know that it's not bliss. If there is no cause, then alone it is bliss. And so you see, again, something that is bliss, which is related to truth, is something that is beyond cause. We have to understand this subtle yet beautiful difference between imagination, reality, and bliss. In imagination, there is no cause. In reality, there is cause. In truth, it is beyond cause. Because when, so many causes coming together. Because when you say that, I am feeling happy, why am I feeling happy? Is there a cause? It is similar to the kind of question and experiment we put forth in the dream state as well. You know, why am I come here? Is there a cause? If there is no cause, you know that's imagination. But as Swami again said, so beautifully, this we will be able to make out only based on the experience. Theoretically, I know, but it can still lead to a confusion as to when there is no cause, is it imagination or is it truth? That can get clarified only through experience, and till then, we are in the stage of the twilight where there is partial darkness and partial light.
Right, I mean, just going by that beautiful explanation that you gave, I mean, in the dream, it is actually, there is no cause for it. And when you say that the eternal is causeless, I think the thing is, it is not defined by a cause. There might be an immediate cause, you know, there might be an immediate reason for a cause. You might define that and say that this is what is leading to this. But even when that cause is removed, you continue to be happy. So it is not defined by that cause. And I mean, just like how Swami said about kala and karma, I think Swami speaks even about kartavya. When Swami says love beyond duty is actually divine. Where there is love, but it is not defined purely by the duty or the dharma of that thing. And Swami says, that's how I love you. It's not because I owe this to you or, you know, I am duty bound to give you this. It's just that this is my love. It is spontaneous love. So that is what Swami is saying, that anything which is not defined by kala, karma, kartavya is beyond this, and it is truth, reality, and as Swami would say, truth, bliss, and, you know, beauty.
That is Satyam Shivam Sundaram.
Right. It is beyond all of this. What is defined by this, what can be understood by this, operates within this, is reality. And what actually is, I mean, there is no logic at all, there is nothing like this, that is what becomes a dream.
Illusion,
it's
that is imagination.
Completely an imagination.
So naturally, having heard all this, possibly we'll quickly go to the last question, which is a question that naturally arises, that when Swami says all this, finally you can get it only through the experience, The question is, how do we have that Advaitic experience? Hislop asks, the mixture of light and darkness, of ignorance and wisdom, which creates unhappiness, which creates trouble. Swami says that the mixture which creates confusion fades away with the right experience. The question is, what is the basic factor that prevents us from having that right experience? This is the next question.
Right. I mean, that's probably the fundamental question, right? I mean, we spoke about the example of a fire and all that. You know, that's what usually parents will do. When the child is going towards the fire and all that, they will tell, no, don't do that, don't touch it. But eventually they'll say, okay, do it. Right? You know, under a controlled circumstances, when you hurt yourself, then it becomes an understanding you will not do it again, even for fun. So sometimes you will see that parents will say, okay, you want to, you know, mess around with that, do it. Then you will learn for yourself.
The child may actually learn, because this is something that I observed over the last 1 month. It happened actually,
right,
where when you tell, okay, go ahead and do it, the child actually doesn't touch, because even as it's nearing fire, it can feel the temperature rising,
right,
and it realizes, it is able to extrapolate and realize how much more hot it is when you actually touch.
Exactly. So in worldly sense, you can, you know, you can lead a person to an experience, but when you talk about a spiritual experience, Swami is talking about this, the experience of Advaita. So a very valid question Hislop is asking is, what is preventing us from having that experience? Why is that experience not available to everybody? So that's the question he asks. And the answer that Swami gives is this. He says, we don't have the intensity that is required. How much effort is needed even to study books and come to the stage when we can read difficult books? How many years, how many hours of toil we put into it? If you have the same intensity in spiritual practice, you will surely know the truth. But we are not as intense as we should be on the spiritual path. We do not apply concentration and one-pointedness. Full concentration is needed even in the world, in walking, talking and reading. We cannot do anything without concentration. We must concentrate even in small worldly tasks. But when we try to think of God, we get restless, and the mind becomes unstable. Why do we do the things of the world with full concentration? Why? Because we are fully interested in it. And with God, we have these doubts. We have full concentration in whatever work we love deeply. Concentration is not full when we do work that we don't love deeply. A small example. We are driving a car. At the same time, we are talking to some passengers. The road becomes narrow and dangerous. You say, please let us not talk now. I must give full concentration to the driving. Why do you say this? It is because you deeply love your life and you must concentrate thoroughly to avoid an accident. Because you have this love for your body, you concentrate on its safety. When you have profound love for God, then concentration on Him comes automatically.
What else to explain or dilate? It is very clear. When it's asked, why is it that we don't have that Advaitic experience, Swami says it's because you don't have the intensity towards it. And even before Dr. Hislop can ask as to why is it that we don't have the intensity, Swami says it's you don't have the intensity because you're not having that concentration and focus. And even as the question arises in the mind, why is it that they don't have the concentration and focus, Swami says that you will automatically focus on those things that you love deeply. And therefore, by conversely, things that you don't love deeply, you will not focus on. Which, you know, it's almost like Swami is keeping a mirror to our face and saying that if you are saying that you are confused by the world, because that was the first question that was asked, if you are confused, it all boils down to you not having that intense love for God or intense love for spirituality. It's like, you know, when we look at the whole sequence of questioning that has happened till now, it becomes clear that karma needs jnana. Otherwise, because that was the first question, how can I act with confusion? Yeah, the answer is you need jnana. But to get jnana, you need bhakti, you need to love. That love is what will make you concentrate on it. That concentration is what will bring intensity in it. And that intensity is what brings the experience. And that experience is what confers jnana. And that jnana is what ensures you do action right and properly. So karma needs jnana and jnana needs bhakti. Which then brings us to the next question. So how do we get this love for God? How do we get this love for God? Because if there's love, automatically concentration focus comes. I think that is how the conversation will proceed.
Right. And I think, Swami, I don't know whether that's the immediate question that comes forth after this, but there is a question where he asks about, you know, how do you get love for Swami, and Swami explains that. But, you know, this point of interest and intensity is what Swami is leaving us with. This Swami has spoken on many, many occasions. You know, Swami would even give the example from Shirdi Baba's life, of where a rich man comes and he says, I want Brahmagnan. And, you know, the Shirdi Baba plays this small drama of saying that I want 5 rupees. And he sends one person in his presence to, you know, go and get 5 rupees. And he goes around asking and he says, I asked so many people, they said nobody has. And this businessman is getting restless. He says, but Swami, what about my Brahmagnan? You know, when am I going to get it? So then Baba says that you have, he gives the right denomination. He says 25 5-rupee notes or something like that in your, I don't know exactly what he says, but he says that this is what you have in your pocket. It would have taken no time for you to take that 5 rupees and say, "You here it is, give me my Brahmagnan." He says, see, that is how much fake interest that you're showing in Brahmagnan. It is not about just coming and saying that, okay, I've satisfied the needs of my body. Now, what else is left? Okay, but some Brahmagnan, they're saying that, let me talk about it. That is not it is, you know. That is why Adi Shankara says in the first verse of Viveka Chudamani, you know, Viveka Chudamani is, if you want to get that ultimate wisdom, what do you need? In that he says,
the crest jewel of, right, Viveka.
He says, Manushatvam, Mumukshatvam, Mahapurush Samshaya. That desire for, that interest for getting release or knowing that ultimate knowledge, he says that itself is so rare to come by. And that's what Swami is saying here. How many people have that intensity? You know, your intensity is only till your stomach is fulfilled. And we've all seen that, you know. The moment the needs of the body kick in, our mind actually stops thinking of all these higher things. We are all running to fulfill those needs. Then that's what Swami is saying, that how much are you seeing this as a necessity and a craving is so strong that is beyond the needs of your body.
On that note, dear listeners, I think we will bring this satsang to a close. It has definitely been very invigorating and interesting for both of us, and we hope it has been the same to you. Our gratitude to some of our listeners who wrote back to us, feeling very happy that this theme has been taken. We are also very happy to have taken up this theme, because we are sure that it will be a very educating and enlightening journey for us over here. Please do pitch in and write in with your thoughts, your feelings, because as I said in the beginning, this is how I'm perceiving it. This is how Prem is perceiving it. But Swami never answers a question. He always answers the questioner. There'll definitely be so many other ways of each person perceiving it, and all of them will be right and perfect in that sense. It will all definitely enrich this satsang if we are able to share all the different perspectives. So don't hesitate. Do write to us when we start back this satsang a fortnight from now again. Because the next fortnight will be on general themes. We'll definitely bring in as much as we can from what our listeners write to us. On that note, we are grateful to Swami for giving us this opportunity and the inspiration to begin this new series. We are sure that it will be wonderful, just like all the other series. We offer it back at His lotus feet in love. We will now end with a bhajan, on the other side of which will be the segment Love to Love. As always.
ಸತ್ಯ ಸನಾತನ ನಿತ್ಯ ನಿರಂಜನ ಭಕ್ತ ಪರಾಯಣ ನಾರಾಯಣ
ಸತ್ಯ ಸನಾತನ ನಿತ್ಯ ನಿರಂಜನ ಭಕ್ತ ಪರಾಯಣ ನಾರಾಯಣ
ಸತ್ಯ ಸನಾತನ ನಿತ್ಯ ನಿರಂಜನ ಭಕ್ತ ಪರಾಯಣ ನಾರಾಯಣ
ಸತ್ಯ ಸನಾತನ ನಿರಂಜನ ಭಕ್ತ ಪರಾಯಣ ನಾರಾಯಣ
ಗೋವಿಂದ ಗೋವಿಂದ ನಾರಾಯಣ सनातन नित्य निरंजन भक्त परायण नारायण
सत्य सनातन नित्य निरंजन भक्त परायण नारायण
गोविंद गोविंद नारायण
गोविंद गोविंद नारायण
गोविंद सनातन नित्य निरंजन भक्त परायण नारायण गोविंद गोविंद नारायण
ओम